Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. In today's White Man Chat, we'll be looking at the American election in 2024. And there are a number of key points that I ask Brandt and Mike to address. But first, I want to just discuss a little bit about Donald Trump, because Trump is a strange character. And the first time and only time that I'd seen a guy who was going to stand for president in America and who was going to do it as an independent, and he came close, was Ross Perot. And in the 1990s, Ross Perot was on CNN a lot, and that was the first time that I got a chance to view American television, and I really liked Ross Perot. There were many things I liked about him. Despite him being a businessman, he had a bit of a militaristic and hardcore kind of background to him, which I really liked. And in many ways, he came across as a strong guy, a determined guy, until someone threatened his family, and he then pulled out of the race. And that was the beginning of the end of Ross Perot. But he was a billionaire, and he was very much an American's American. I liked Ross Perot a lot, even though he was liberal. And when it comes to character, I thought Ross Perot had an interesting character. And I was very disgusted when he lost to the likes of Bill Clinton. To me, it was horrific. I really had hoped to see something good in America. But keep in mind that America is built on the Roman Republic. And in the Roman Republic, the wealthy were also the big politicians. So what you've got is you've got the massive middle-class whites, and then you've got the rich, the richest of the rich at the top. And the Roman Republic is built on that model and that interaction between this massive middle class and then these guys who are very wealthy. And we might well be seeing that playing out in America nowadays. And in this show, I do raise the issue of Oswald Spengler, and you'll see why I raise the issue of Oswald Spengler. And I think that something is going on a bigger scale. And maybe Trump is just the beginning of something. Whereas Ross Perot failed, maybe Trump is the beginning of something greater. And it ties back to Oswald Spengler. I'll be mentioning it in the show. Now, one of the things about a leader with character is that regardless of what the leader is like, if he's quite a determined guy and he is himself, then regardless of what his character is, people will begin to notice it. And for me, Trump comes across as having a real character. When you compare Trump to lots of these other politicians, modern politicians have no character. The vast majority don't have any character at all. They are merely weaklings, and they are taught what to say and how to behave, etc. They don't really show their real inner personality. But Donald Trump is very much himself. Regardless of all his quirks and foibles and things, he is what he is. And I noticed that people in America, that there are a lot of people who do Donald Trump impersonation. And even though it's done for humorous or other purposes, I think it says something about Americans, especially white Americans, that they are starting to latch onto this strange personality, regardless of his foibles. So check out this little video where a guy does a Donald Trump impersonation after the assassination attempt, and I think it's funny. But I also think that this guy reflects the kind of character that finally comes out of Donald Trump. This is what Donald Trump is like. And lots of Americans are getting used to this man's personality. And in history and in leadership, this kind of thing becomes quite important. Now, as you will see in the show, Brandt points out all the bad things about Donald Trump's character and why Trump is not really the kind of stuff that would make for a European hero. But even so, there's something about Trump in this time of great weakness and this time when the West is very pathetic. There is something about Trump that is very different to all other Western leaders, and people are noticing it. After this video, the show starts and we discuss the election, and you'll see as we go down various paths what Brandt and Mike end up telling me, and I found it extremely interesting. And by the end of the show, they have given me their views on what the main issues are that pertain to Trump's promises to his electorate. Now, for me, I was very interested in Trump versus Harris as a measure of white power. Do white Americans still have the ability to actually take control of their politics? And one of the statistics that came out after the election was that 84% of Trump's voter base was white, and 79% of the Jews at the exit polls showed that they had voted for Harris. So to me, Trump, regardless of his flaws, is a measure of what whites would like for America, whereas Jews would have preferred Harris. And then there's the whole issue of election rigging. I had been concerned as to whether the 2024 election could be rigged, but it turns out that the Republicans were very ready for it this time. And you'll see in the discussion what Brandt and Mike have to say.
I want you to vote yes or no. Is this the greatest impersonation of Donald Trump on the internet? You've been warned.
You can take my ears, but you cannot take my liberty. They want to cut off my ears like the Taliban, but what they don't know is my ears can grow back like SpongeBob through budding, by the way. Hit me with your best shot, why don't you? Because if that's the best you got, you're a loser. You're such a loser, you missed so bigly. By the way, you had a big opportunity. You could have made my head blow up on TV, but you didn't do that, did you? Now my ear is going to grow back bigger and better. It will have better hearing. I will hear like an owl.
So, Mike, today I'd like to ask you and Brandt a little bit about the U.S. election and your thoughts, experiences, because I tried to follow it as much as I could, but it was almost as if people were really quiet.
Jan, Brandt, it's really wonderful to be back with you and talk about this subject.
So, did the election outcome surprise either of you, or did you see that this was definitely going to happen? How did you see other people that you knew react towards this, the election, and going to vote? Were people like very serious? Was there talk that everyone's got to get involved?
I'll dive in a little bit. I think the quickest and easiest thing to say is everyone's happy. So I don't know very many people who would have been actual voters for Kamala Harris. I'm sure there's a few in, you know, here and there, and maybe some in the cities, and certainly some serious amounts of actual votes for her in, you know, places like the Washington, D.C. area, where everybody works for the government and they want everything to stay exactly the same as it's been. So they keep their jobs and their nice little houses and their contracts and so on. So, you know, but out in the actual real world, you know, I don't think there was all that much support. So as a sum, you know, to sum it up, I'd say I wasn't surprised. What about you, Brent?
Yeah, I'd have to agree with that assessment that I was not surprised. And there are some pockets of places in the United States where I used to live where I know that the majority of the support was for Kamala Harris and her gang of anti-whites. But throughout the majority of the country, the support was behind Trump. And if someone looks at one of those voting maps that has the breakdown by county in the United States, you see how many of those were red versus how many were blue. And the blue, once again, is primarily in the cities because you have a lot of non-whites in the cities. And then, like Mike said, Washington, D.C. is its own little weird monster, which is going to support whatever the deep state happens to be doing, and they want to keep that in power. So I was not surprised.
Its own monster. That's good.
Yeah, because I read some analysis somewhere where they said something like 84% of whites voted for Trump. So sounds like for you guys, that was pretty much a done deal.
I wouldn't be surprised at that at all. And there are so many reasons to vote for Trump and not to vote for Kamala Harris. And everybody has the right to see in Trump what they want, or see an aspect of Trump or somebody that supported Trump that they like. And put their vote and their support behind him. It doesn't mean that he's our savior or you know, some kind of exaggerated thoughts about what he can and can't do, but it was an obvious choice for so many reasons. And the campaign was run brilliantly. You have to give them credit for what they did. They understood that most people's eyes and ears are on the internet, not on mainstream TV by vast majorities. Trump's schedule of going on podcasts was brilliant. He kept up the rally schedule until the first assassination attempt, and then it kind of slowed it down because they were limited on venues where he could be protected. And, you know, really, the election was people that were probably on the fence, watched podcasts, watched things on Twitter or X, whatever it's called now, and, you know, weren't looking at mainstream TV, which was still to the last day literally trying to say that it was neck and neck when it was never neck and neck.
That's interesting. TV was saying it was neck and neck, but you never saw it as being like that at all.
Right. And it's just come out. I don't remember where I saw the story, but it's just come out that the Harris internal polling, which is the only polling that matters because that's how they decide where to spend money. The internal polling never had her winning. So that contradicted the traditional television pollsters that are out there trying to convince the public that they're scientifically saying, oh, this is where we're at and this is what it's going to look like. So that's an interesting contradiction. They were operating, losing, or knowing or predicting that they were going to lose the entire time. And the television polls on all channels, or the mainstream polls, whatever you want to call them, were saying it's neck and neck and the entire time. But then they said, well, you know, it's always going to be Kamala just winning by a little bit. And that was their way of presenting it to the TV watching public, which isn't very many people anymore.
Now that is really interesting because I was watching those kinds of things, and there's also that Jew, I forget his name, the guy who boasts that he has got every election correctly predicted since 1982 or whatever. And he was making his thing, his keys to the White House, and he was saying, well, you know, this key and that key, and therefore Kamala is going to win. And literally, I think almost like up to the day before, he was saying, Kamala is going to win, kind of thing. And you say that the everything that they said, even on mainstream TV, was actually just a plain lie?
Propaganda. You know, because when you're losing, you don't tell people you're losing. You tell people we're winning, but keep the fight up because we're barely winning. Even Trump, I believe, in his internal campaign was shown that he's going to win. But he said in his speeches to people, act like we're down by 10 points. Get out there. Make sure you vote. I mean, you got to give the guy credit. In all three of his election runs, he got out and spoke directly to the people. That's the purpose of these rallies. That's the purpose of his method of running things. And you could go and show up at a rally. They were mostly focused on swing states, but you could go up, show up at a rally, you could hear the man speak, and you could decide for yourself. Whereas the other side, if you look back 4 years, obviously, you know, you remember the story of the circles where Joe Biden would have six circles for the audience and with six people, you know, and Trump in these rallies had realistically a range of, say, 15, 20,000 people up to some of them with 80,000 people, depending on the venue. And sometimes there were 10,000 people outside. Sometimes there were spontaneous events like a car rally with tens of thousands of cars driving around with Trump flags. If you, Jan, weren't here in the States during this, the one thing that is hard to communicate to somebody outside is the energy, the natural ground up spontaneous energy behind the support for Trump. Now, we can have another discussion criticizing certain aspects of Trump. That's fine. I'm describing two separate things. I'm describing the support, the actual, what it was like, the energy on the ground versus the perhaps legitimate criticisms, et cetera, those are separate issues. But as far as the time leading up to the campaigns, I can tell you there was nothing like it. The energy, the excitement, people honking at each other if they saw somebody with a Trump flag on their car. There's nothing like it. And there's certainly nothing like it in the socialist, Marxist, communist, you know, side of politics here. Those people have a different approach.
Because the one thing that I did say to people before the election was I said to people that, to me, Trump, the whole Trump versus Kamala Harris thing could be seen as a thing of, let's say, whites versus Jews. Who's got control of American politics? Because I kind of figured that whites would be the ones voting for Trump. And if he wins, it's a sign that white America won and got its way. What would you say to that?
Brent?
Okay, well, first of all, I haven't made any comments yet about anything. So I want to go back and say a couple things here. So what Mike said about people projecting onto Trump what they want Trump to be, I think that's very important. And that's why we see so much division in the United States right now, where there's probably 40-45% of the population have the Trump derangement syndrome, because they have a cartoon evil version of him, just like they have a cartoon evil version of Hitler or some other type of character along those lines. And then also this excitement that Mike was speaking about, it was almost as if the American people, you know, mostly whites, but, you know, some non-whites as well, were starting to feel extremely oppressed by their own government, almost as if we were having this cage built around us, and we were day by day becoming more and more enslaved and having more rights taken away from us and seeing our money getting spent in ways that we don't want it getting spent. And especially with all that, you know, the anti-white policies that were getting put in place. And what Trump represented, whether he's going to prove to be so or not, is some sort of a salvation of us, you know, breaking our chains, or, you know, getting set free. Eventually, we're looking at the day of our freedom of, you know, when he becomes inaugurated, you know, Big Daddy Trump is going to make everything better. Now, personally, like Mike said, that's a totally different argument or a totally different discussion. The candidate Trump is very, very good. The President Trump was, in my opinion, extremely incompetent the first time, extremely disappointing and extremely incompetent. And that's a different discussion. Now, going back to what you're talking about with like Jews versus whites, I don't really know how that shakes out because, as you know, what was it, something like 84 or 80% of Jews in the United States voted against Trump. And that's because they see him as an avatar for white people. And the last thing they want is for white people to feel like they are a single folk. They do not want white unity. They do not want whites to have a country for themselves anywhere where Jews want to live. So that's why they absolutely hate his guts. On the other hand, you have the extremely rich right-wing Jews and donors that did vote for Trump because they know that Trump is going to give Israel everything it wants and more. Okay, he's gonna spoon feed them, and you can see that in a lot of the picks for his cabinet. So, you know, I don't really have an opinion on, you know, Jews versus whites and whites won or something like that, because some of the areas in which Trump's voting percentages improved were with Hispanics and with blacks. And I don't know what he did with American Indians and, you know, the DOT Indians and Pakistanis and stuff like that. But the big voting blocks of non-whites improved for Trump. And that was partially due to the image that he had of the outsider with the deep state trying to kill him, imprison him, make up lies about him, just do everything they possibly could to stop him. And they couldn't stop him because he had a lot of support on his side. That's another reason why people supported him, is because he was the underdog. And one of the things that I learned about Americans when I was a little kid is that Americans are kind of stupid and Americans are intellectually lazy. But the way that you can get Americans to do something is they will support the underdog. When someone is getting beaten, they will feel sorry for whoever's getting beaten and they will start supporting that. That's how the whole civil rights, the anti-white civil rights movement worked. You start showing this group of people over here, oh, they're getting beaten, they're downtrodden. Well, that's where all the sympathy is going to go. So in this case, with the American psyche, Trump was the downtrodden, beaten little underdog in the minds of a lot of American voters. And it was increasingly obvious how evil and uncaring and corrupt the deep state was day by day. And Trump's campaign did a great job. He stayed on message. He kept the energy going. He avoided getting killed. He worked at McDonald's. He drove a trash truck. You know, every time he got insulted, he would go out and he would play that up, and people liked it. It's a big like F you to the system. So there's lots of reasons why Trump got into office, he's not there yet. I don't expect very much from him, because he doesn't really have racial loyalty as far as I'm concerned. He doesn't understand that the United States only exists because white people built it and maintain it. So he's not going to honor that. He is going to honor what right-wing Jewish donors want. And as far, again, as the whites versus Jews, I mean, I don't really have an opinion on that. I mean, I just said everything that I know about it.
Very interesting stuff, Brent. Very interesting. The reason why I say whites versus Jews is not so much because the tiny Jewish vote makes a difference, but because of this bigger push, this bigger, wider push that pushes against Trump. And I was wondering if they were going to try to rig it again. And the interesting thing that comes from what Mike was saying, where Mike was saying that they knew that they were losing, but they were putting it out publicly, the narrative that it's so close, and that when she wins, she'll win just by a little bit. That to me almost sounded very much like the rigging narrative. But I do wonder behind the scenes whether anything changed, whether Trump or other white Americans in the system did things behind the scenes to see to it that this thing can't be rigged, or whether it was just so freaking overwhelming that people just dived in and the other side just collapsed quickly. Any thoughts?
Yep. Mike, wasn't there Republican lawyers at all the major voting places in the swing states watching the voting process and the counting process?
Okay. I agree with your quick reaction when you said both. I agree with that 100%. And by the way, what you said earlier was brilliant, Brent. Great analysis of the difference of what people want to see in Trump. But jumping to the cheating, Jan, you're absolutely right. And this may be 101 and very basic for us that have been through it, but I'll say this for your foreign audience. The way that the cheating is done is by over-reporting a result, especially from an urban area. They wait until late in the election day, and they see how many cheating fake votes they need, and then they manufacture those votes. Now, the methodology of how that's done is different in different states, depending on different machines and so on. So, you know, let's say during the COVID operation, the method was mail-in voting. So the actual election took place, and in states which they mathematically determined, we need these six states to cheat and win, otherwise Trump's going to have another landslide in 2020. The methodology at that time was the mail-in bags, the bags of mail-in ballots. So without going too much into technicality, each state works a little bit differently and has a little bit more or less controls on who's in the voter rolls or what kind of ballot can be fed through the machine, et cetera, et cetera. But let's just take Georgia, for example. So they see that Trump won, and then they all go quiet, and then the mainstream news goes quiet. Well, we're still working on it. They then know how many mail-in ballots they need to feed through the machine to show that the other side, in this case, was Biden, that Biden won by a little bit, because they need that state. They need that math, that electoral vote, right? So they sat there in the middle of the night. They claimed there was a water main break in Atlanta in this basically almost all black area. And they sat there feeding hundreds of thousands of ballots through the machines until they got the number they wanted. That's why they pre-reported both then and with Kamala that, oh, well, she's barely going to win, because barely going to win means the other side's going to win, and we'll sit up all night long making sure we raise the numbers until we win by a little bit. And you can see this in, you know, election cheating all over the world. The biggest telltale sign is that evening the count stops, and then you wake up the next morning and the numbers have flipped. So that's what they did in basically six states in 2020, which are, if memory serves me correctly, Nevada, Arizona, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and Georgia, where that's where they needed to cheat to have the math to win. And you'll notice that coming now to 2024, for some reason, the cheating didn't take place in those places. So that's a very big question as to why, that Jan, that you asked. And I don't have the answer. Could it be that they just didn't have the energy, the will, the money? Did they not have the method of the COVID mail-in ballots? I don't know, right? I know there's also possibilities of electronic cheating, but what's the reason that they quote unquote allowed the actual election to take place? We get Trump as the winner. I don't have the answer to that, but something is different from 2020.
Brent, do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, just real quick. I think Mike described it to a T. It was pretty obvious what happened in 2020. And I think there might have been a couple things this time. Number one, besides much more support for Trump, the GOP operatives, and GOP means the Republican Party to people outside of the U.S., they were very proactive this time. They fully expected the Democrats to cheat at these polling locations in the major cities. So I know from what I heard, there were staff of lawyers at every single location in the swing states where they thought voting was going to be rigged. So they were on top of it. They were watching this time. They weren't sitting back on their asses and just assuming that the Democrats would be honest like they did last time. So that was one thing. The other thing, too, is if there are orders coming from the top down to rig or not rig an election, the extremely wealthy global class or anti-white oligarchs or whatever term people want to use, they might have recognized that Trump is going to be more useful in office to them versus Kamala Harris and a continuation of the Biden administration for whatever reason. It could be because of his stance on Israel. I don't know. So there may not have been pressure from the top down to try and rig like they did last time. I just have no idea.
Interesting. You know,
carry on.
Okay, so I have a way of looking at this, or let's just call it a hypothesis, that I think both things can be true at the same time. On one hand, you have some elites or well-known people or just sort of influential people who genuinely were scared to death of the communism and said, whoa, we got to put the brakes on here. These people are corrupt. These people are awful. And they had some reason why they jumped ship from Democrat. Okay. And there's a lot, by the way. I mean, and people, surprising people, including leftist intellectuals. Let's not go down that rabbit hole. But a lot of people jumped ship from the Democrats this time, from the Harris, you know, the possibility of a Harris regime. Okay. So I think there's a whole bunch of very genuine support and some support that people were very surprised at. Like, for example, John F. Kennedy's nephew, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., endorsed Trump. A year before, he said, I will never join with Trump. So something happened. He saw something. He, you know, said, we need to do something here. We need to get the government to stop supporting pharmaceuticals that are killing off of all our people and making us sick. So, you know, he had his reasons, and now he has a role in this, you know, potential upcoming administration where he's been announced as HHS secretary, which is Health and Human Services, which is above everybody in the world will know this, but this is this is a job that is above the old job that Fauci had. So this is a important position. So imagine, if you want some good news, Trump has announced RFK Jr., the man who wrote the Real Anthony Fauci book, as above the job that Fauci had. So, you know, we can see some sort of positive, you know, developments here. So that's one side of this big, huge support that Trump had. Now, on the, what Brent probably correctly called the sort of top-down orders side, there was a moment in the summer that I had this sort of aha sort of feeling that I thought that there's been a switch of support. And I don't know if you guys remember when there were a handful of leftist, liberal, college kid protests against the genocide that is going on in Gaza, but which is being done by Israel against Palestinians and Palestinian Muslims, Palestinian Christians, and, you know, other people that live, you know, next to and surrounding Israel. So while that was happening, now let's just take a moment and think about this. The young leftist kids have been trained or brainwashed, whatever way you want to say it, all their lives to look out for oppression and to see the world under the Marxist eyes that everything is oppressor and oppression. Now, so then they actually identified, because the internet is, you know, has lots of free, enough sort of applications with enough freedom to find out what's going on for yourself, like, for example, like TikTok. So then they actually, these young leftists actually identified a real genocide and a real actual oppression that was being done live, and they could see it on TikTok and a little bit probably on X. And so they started protesting. But then the powers that be and the big wealthy Jewish donors to these universities said, whoa, no, you're not supposed to notice those oppressed people, just the ones that we tell you to notice. And there were threats from these big donors to stop funding these universities if they didn't get control of these anti-Israel protests that were going on in the United States in the summer. And so I'll just call it a hypothesis, not of sort of the big order came down, but maybe something that played into influencing this election was, we're kicking the left out because they didn't get control. We can't have this. We can't have these people noticing. That's a fun word these days, noticing. We can't have these people noticing what's going on in Gaza. You're supposed to be, you know, noticing the oppressions, the only the ones that we tell you about or that we tell you to notice, like the fake ones. So this was kind of a moment that things changed. And you, after that, you did have some big, huge left-wing billionaire type class move to Trump, not just the right wing. So that's just a little moment in this scenario that may or may not have played into this other overwhelming support for Trump. What do you guys think?
It could be. I don't know. I'm not on the inside there. But one thing that I will say with respect to RFK Jr. joining Trump's campaign is that, you know, when we vote for someone, we don't get a line item pick of what we want in a candidate. The candidate already comes complete with a bunch of good stuff and a bunch of bad stuff. And we have to look at all the good and bad in each candidate and say, which one, which mix of good and bad is the most good and the least amount of bad that we want to vote for. And that's probably what goes through the minds, you know, on a subliminal level with someone like RFK Jr. or Musk or Tulsi Gabbard and others. And they see Trump as a vehicle for putting in an administration that's going to push through some of the things that they want to have happen. So even though Trump is supposedly this anti-woman, hateful, racist, crazy person, whatever, and RFK was running against him, he also recognizes, well, wait a second, with the current administration, Biden-Harris, none of this stuff is ever going to get done that needs to get done, but it can get done with Trump. So if I go ahead and hold my nose and align myself with Trump, you know, I give him my support, I show him loyalty. Trump always rewards loyalty, and he's going to put me in this position that I want to be in. So it makes sense from a political point of view for a lot of these former Democrats to then ally themselves with Trump, because Trump is like this big shark and they're the little sucker fishes that are going to stick to him and, you know, he's going to push on through and they're going to be in a position to where they're going to actually have some power where they wouldn't beforehand.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well said, Brandt. And it's a spectrum of people that are just purely thinking I can get what I want, all the way to, you know, some sort of a feeling about the general message, the general make America great again, and including in that basket people that are scared of communism. So, yeah, this seems to be the theme, is that people do see what they want in Trump. And I think there's two groups within the Trump camp that have it, that kind of have things very wrong. One would be the sort of Trump is the savior. There's a secret operation going on, and, you know, Trump's going to come back and arrest all the bad guys, which is, you know, complete nonsense, to look at it that on that extreme of a level. And the other group that sort of had it wrong are the people who I've run into, several people who think, no, they're exactly the same. It's all a show. They work for the exact same people. And of course, I get that there are elements of that, but it's not exactly the same. I think life in the United States would be drastically worse under a Harris regime where they had the power to do the things that they want to do, because they are, as you said, Brandt, they're anti-white, they're anti-Western, they're anti-civilization, and they're just horrid people. And let's not forget, Kamala Harris's husband is a piece of work himself, Douglas Imhoff, the wonderful, lovely lawyer who, I don't know whether this marriage is real or not, but is obviously was in the White House as the second gentleman, they called him. Isn't exactly one of our friends, let's put it that way.
Yeah, well said.
Very interesting listening to both of you. Just a quick one about Kamala Harris's husband. I saw that he's Jewish. And feel free to tell me a bit about him.
Go ahead, Mike. I don't know anything about the guy.
I can't turn up my nose enough to deeply research the guy either. So I'll leave it at that.
Okay. No, very interesting. So very interesting that leftists and Democrats and wealthy people jumped from the Democrats to Trump. And I must say that Kamala Harris, I mean, I detested Obama, you know, just breaking that whole long-standing rule of America being run by a white male. And that's also why I was looking at this as sort of Jews versus whites, because the exit polls showed 79% of Jews voting against Trump, and the leftists and Jews would want to see Kamala Harris, America's first female president, breaking yet another example of the long-standing white patriarchy. And it would be a double win for them, because it's not only a woman, but a non-white woman. The fact that that disgusting woman, I could never even watch Kamala Harris speak, because she can hardly put a whole sentence together. There are just some things that during the whole Biden presidency, there are some things that I stopped watching. I can't bear to listen to Biden himself because of his dementia. I can't bear to listen to that black woman who's the White House press secretary, and I cannot bear to listen to Kamala Harris. So for me, that's just brain dead on like a whole other level. But yeah. But any comments you guys have?
Yeah, let me say something, Jan, that I think that you'll like this. Because you say comments like this quite a lot. You know, there would have been a silver lining to Kamala Harris being installed as president, because things would have gotten so bad, it would have been clearly evident that things were rigged. And finally, enough white Americans would have sunk in that their country is gone, that they would have felt motivated to start doing something other than watching sports ball and driving, you know, large trucks and voting Republican. So it wouldn't have been all bad. And by the same token, this Trump winning is going to lull some people to sleep that, oh, everything is okay now. I can stop paying attention to politics and I can go back to whatever the hell it was that consumes all of my time. So I'm, you know, I'm trying to get a sense of that as Trump takes over in the White House once again. And I want to see how conscious people are as to what is going on. What are their attitudes? Because I already see a few people saying, oh, nature is healing now. Oh, everything's getting, you know, back to normal again. It's, you know, we won, you know, a white woman won a beauty contest in a white country. So, you know, we finally won again. The world's on the right path, you know, and, you know, Jesus is king, and just all these platitudes. Well, no, it ain't working that way, folks. Like, if you're going back to sleep now, you don't understand what the hell's going on. And so there is a section of the population in the U.S. that fall into that camp. And part of that camp is one of the factions that Mike referred to before, what people derisively call the MAGA-tards or the Q-tards, who believe these bizarre, childish stories that Trump was in charge all along. He was always the president. There's underground tunnels. The earth is flat. He's going to arrest everyone. And, you know, everyone who's bad is going to be deported. Like, no, that's not what's going on. We have a lot of low information people in the United States, because Americans have been, throughout my whole life, have been more concerned with being entertained than being educated. And it is a culture that has got to change in the United States to reflect the challenges that are in front of us. We've been lulled to sleep like a bunch of stupid sheep, you know, going to slaughter. There's a difference between the European mindset and how they approach politics and the American mindset and how they approach politics. The American mindset is much more childish, much more simplistic. And if there's any Europeans that know a lot of Americans, they know exactly what I'm talking about.
Wow, that is very interesting what you said there, Brent. But, you know, in certain respects, all whites, even in South Africa, function in that entertained versus educated mode. I often sit and ponder TV, and I say to myself that TV is actually something that could have been perfect for education and information and teaching. And the fact that it's used for virtually everything but that is a real problem for whites everywhere.
Yeah.
And don't worry about the MAGA-tards. I know certain MAGA-tards personally, and they told me exactly those things. Trump is really secretly in charge. He's always been there. This is a deeper plan, operating in the fourth dimension. And that kind of thing. And but I do understand how people get there, though. It's from lack of trust. It's because all kinds of trust and everything's been broken. So people are just trying, in many ways, whites everywhere are just trying to live. And most people just want to get on with their work and just earn some money, that's all. And this other stuff is stuff that's like a nuisance, but you're quite right, eh? That this can lull people into a false sense of security. And I was wondering whether Trump himself had been lulled into a false sense of security in his first term, and whether maybe people won't be quite as lulled this time because of what happened in 2020, plus the court cases? What do you think?
I'll talk real fast here. Yeah, I think Trump's eyes have been opened a little bit this time. I think we can see that in the speed with which he is picking his cabinet, because he's not leisurely doing it. I think that means that he's put some thought into it this time beforehand. He was probably expecting to win win the presidency. The first time around, I don't know what was going through his mind, but he was ill-prepared. I think that he liked the idea of becoming president much more than actually understanding what it took to be president and how DC operated and how entrenched the deep state was. And he had no idea how he was going to be backstabbed constantly. And to be honest, I don't know how a person would prepare for all of that. But he was not ready to become president. So I think it was a combination of being backstabbed, and it was a combination of just extreme incompetence on his part. And the image that I got in my mind, and this is going to sound a little negative, but it was like in America, if we got Trump in as the quarterback and we block for Trump and we get all the way down to the 1 yard line and we're about to score a touchdown. Or if we're a rugby fan, the eight man is about to score a try. Or for soccer, someone's a striker's about to kick a goal. And then instead of kicking the goal or making the try or the touchdown, everything's open for them. You do all the work for them and they just flop over, and then they have diarrhea and they shit their pants and they flop around, and the other team takes the ball and they run all the way back and they score and they win the game. And you're sitting there thinking, like, what the hell just happened? It's like, we did all this work for you. This is supposed to work. You made these insinuations or these, promises, and then you didn't do anything. You floundered around. You were a giant disappointment. And not only did you fail to do most of the things you said you were going to do, but you got the anti-whites so whipped up, such a frenzy, that they're coming down on us. The Department of Justice is coming down on us like a bag of rocks, and you're letting it happen. With the January 6th protesters, he throws them under the bus. When there was stuff going on at Charlottesville, he didn't defend the people at Charlottesville. He just pissed off all the anti-whites, and then he didn't do anything to help us out. He talked about how much money he was going to give to blacks. The Platinum Plan. It's a beautiful plan. The biggest ever. The best. It's huge. So I would have just slapped the shit out of him like a hysterical woman if I had the chance the first time around. Is he going to do better this time? I'll wait and see.
That's very interesting. Even Alex Linder was very skeptical. Alex Linder was posting, I asked him, what does he think? And Alex Linder was saying, well, Trump, because Alex and I did a video a long time ago where we even said, maybe Trump is going to be the greatest American president of all time. Alex was like really stoked up on Trump, and so was I. And we were all disappointed. Alex this time said that Trump will basically say anything that he needs to say in order to get elected. And Alex says he's not going to do any of the things that we're expecting. So Alex has gone from Trump's the greatest president to don't trust him. And I also don't know what to say. And yeah. Any thoughts, Mike?
Trump can't do better than the culture. So Trump can't rise. I don't think Trump can rise above our general culture. I'll just give you an example. People like to blame him for being involved in Operation Warp Speed and pushing the so-called COVID vaccine bioweapon jab that has killed and injured millions of people. And he never, retracted from it. He just keeps saying, I'm a hero because I got this done so fast. But he didn't really do anything except go on TV every day. But it's the people, the people lined up and got basically psyoped into taking this garbage and putting this in their body. So even though we still have a third of Americans that didn't do it, and we were skeptical or just flat out rejected it from the beginning, you know, two thirds of the people rolled up their sleeve. So we can't make Trump into being a hero that's better than, you know, the sort of level of the country, if that kind of makes sense. The country, the people, we are under various, and I'm using a concept from a friend of mine who wouldn't want to be mentioned, but he explained to me that we're under all kinds of neurotoxins, the jabs, television, the psychological warfare against our people, the foods, the medicines, everything is a neurotoxin. And he said to me that if you look at the way parasites operate in nature, they inject their host with neurotoxins to keep them docile. So we're a people who are injected with neurotoxins. So I think there's only so much we can expect to get out of this election. Again, I'm generally pleased. I obviously wanted him to win versus the other side. But I'm kind of with you guys as far as like, you know, not expecting some sort of heroic changes or for everything to suddenly become the way I want it to become just because a certain candidate won.
Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting, Mike. One thing that occurred to me when Trump lost last time around, correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that an American president can't do more than two terms in a row. And the one thing that occurred to me, though I thought it was kind of impossible because he'd allowed himself to be cheated out last time round, was I thought to myself, if in some way Trump can come back, and I very much doubted it, because I thought to myself, you know, he's the president, he's in power, he's got everything at his fingertips, and he manages to let people cheat him at the election, and he still can't, you know, manage to make his case and sort that out. And, you know, he's been kicked out at the height of his power. How the hell can a guy who couldn't get in at the height, who couldn't stay in at the height of his power, how the hell could he come back? And I got to admit, he's blown my mind in coming back. But correct me if I'm wrong, but technically, would it be correct to say that he could now stick around for two more terms? That would mean that he could be ultimately a three-term, a president who made three terms.
I'm not sure, but I think you can only serve two terms, whether they're consecutive or separate.
I think Brandt is right. I've heard there's a little tiny bit of debate about this subject, but I don't think he intends to run again after that.
Really? So he might only be 4 years and that's it.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. See, so that's another thing too, that we haven't discussed, is that, you know, four years from now, people are going to be talking about and celebrating and getting upset about a couple other people or one other person who's going to be president next. So who knows how Trump's two presidencies are going to be viewed, you know, by history. Are they going to be pivotal, or are they going to be duds? Are they just going to be a bump in the road? I don't know. I think Trump's value has been in getting conversations started about subjects that used to be taboo, that white people were never supposed to speak about. As far as him being an actual commander in chief, you know, being the executive of the government, again, I don't really expect much from him. I think he's just a little bit too much of a baby boomer And he's also enmeshed in the culture, like Mike was talking about. He can't rise above that. Trump is very good at being a salesman, and he believes in himself, and he's resilient. And he likes to take revenge on people that have wronged him. But in my mind, he's not a great man. You know, he's no Caesar. He's no Alexander. He's not going to have the large enough view, a big enough perspective to understand the direction the U.S. has gone in and what needs to have happened. And part of that, again, is because he has zero racial loyalty. He does not understand that white people build Western civilization and no one else. And that has to be preserved or you lose it. And he panders to whoever will give him votes, like Mike also said earlier. So he's not a great man. He's a good businessman. He's a good salesman. He's a great campaigner. That's how he gets voted into office. But that does not translate to being a good president.
Now, Brent, you say deep things. And yeah, when you say no racial loyalty, the other thing that I was thinking about myself as I'm currently I'm busy going through chunks of Mein Kampf again more closely. And, you know, I agree with you. He's not Caesar. He's not Alexander. He's definitely not Hitler. And the difference between Hitler and all these other, and all these other, let's call it modern political garbage. You know, the standards are so low everywhere. Everyone who gets into power, they don't even know they don't even know the history of their country. You know, when I look at some guys like Nixon, that my little bit of understanding of Nixon was Nixon at least had some understanding of history. You know, you could actually listen to Nixon debating racial stuff, debating the way countries function. I must tell you, out of the American presidents in my lifetime, the one that seemed to have the most substance is actually Richard Nixon, which, by the way, would explain why they had to get rid of him, because anyone with a real brain and a real direction, you know, is a threat. But you can look at any other country, any other Western country. None of these leaders have got any depth. They don't have the kind of depth of like a guy like Hitler. You know, Hitler could come back and talk to you about history, about science, about this, about that. You know, Hitler had an actual background of knowledge that he was trying to get to his people. And that, of course, doesn't exist. It doesn't exist with Trump, and it doesn't exist with anyone else. And that is probably the thing that's most needed in the Western world, which is why I say to other whites, to whites in the white right, that, you know, the white right should start thinking that the real future is to start preparing leaders for tomorrow. Real leaders who know about stuff, the kinds of people, Brent, who, you know, the kinds of youngsters who'd be going through your stuff, you know, your School of the West stuff, that they understand what this is about. I want to ask you guys two final questions. The one is, regardless of Trump's faults, I don't know if either of you have looked into Oswald Spengler. I actually want to do a video about Oswald Spengler, because Oswald Spengler had a whole thing where he wrote about the future, and Oswald Spengler was absolutely despondent about the West more than 100 years ago. And Oswald Spengler wrote an incredibly complicated book, but the upshot of his book was interesting, and it actually was something that motivated Hitler, actually. Spengler said that the West is going down, and the West will go down for another 100 years. And Spengler said that the West will go down, and then And he actually even specifically cited a date, eh? Spengler said that after the year 2000, we will enter the age of the Caesars. And Hitler hated what Spengler wrote because Hitler wanted to turn things around immediately. But anyway, I've sat and thought about this thing of the age of the Caesars, and I've wondered whether Donald Trump, flawed and messed up as he is, and fumbling and bumbling and, you know, all the weird things, but and also, as Mike says, limited by American culture. I wonder whether Trump is some kind of beginning of the Caesars, because he's different to everyone else in that he's got a personal persona. Brandt, you raised the issue that he will engage in revenge, which, you know, and the other thing about him is Trump has got a personal ego. He's got a personal ego. He loves himself. He believes in himself. And he goes and he does his thing. And the worst thing you can do with Trump, and that was what I also saw in that book that I put out, the whole audio book about the Trump White House, where they said that Trump is uncontrollable, that basically he'll just make his own decisions on the spur of the moment or whatever. So he's a wild card. He also has got personal vendettas and personal stuff, and he is drawn to power, and he likes using power, and that's not a bad thing. So, and another thing I've heard, they've tried to compare him to Hitler, but there was something I heard the other day where they were saying that Trump has an obsession with dictators, and he may have read books on those kinds of people. So I wonder whether Trump, flawed as he is the beginning of something bigger, and whether, and he's a special kind of American character. You know, pardon me for talking a little bit longer, but you know, I've even watched these people who come and who mimic Trump. And they do a fantastic job, and it's hilarious. These guys who mimic Trump, and they are absorbed by his persona. He's got a unique persona unlike anything else. And he's also changed the GOP. Is it possible that this strange figure called Trump is either the beginning of something bigger for America with some kind of change in America? Brandt, you've said he's opened many doors. What do you think about the long term? Any thoughts on any of these things? Either of you?
I guess at a more basic level, to answer that question, if you compare to Biden or what would have been a Harris administration, we can say for sure that Biden was not running anything. And we can say probably Harris wouldn't have run anything, although they would have let her have pet projects and these administrative jobs, you know, would have been running the government, you know, Secretary of State and other positions that, you know, that have done quite a bit of damage during the Biden times, Blinken and so on, you know, international damage, pushing the shots, you know, all this woke crap. So we could sort of guess, okay, Biden ran nothing. Harris would have run nothing, would have been a sort of a figurehead to focus either your admiration if you're a, you know, leftist, or some other group or something that thinks that that's good, or your rage, you know, if you're on the right, you could focus all that on her while she's just sort of a nothing. But with Trump, at least he believes he's running, he's doing the job and running the administrative branch of the government. So, and probably is much, much more of a force in that job than a pure figurehead. So sort of at this very, very basic level, it was also an election of an act, you know, a figurehead, a certain color, a woman, you know, just sort of filling a role. No one would actually believe that she would be commander in chief. No one would believe she's running anything. But, you know, some of the base TV watching public might have liked her little cackling or something. I don't know. But Trump doesn't. Trump is not entering this job thinking I'm purely just a figurehead. I'm purely acting, even though he's a former actor. he's not entering this job thinking I'm acting. He's 100% sincere that he believes he is going to go and do the job that he was elected to do. So at least you have that step up above a pure show. I mean, there's people that would argue he is a big show, but I think that he is a step above that in terms of what we would have got. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I understand what Mike is saying. And I think that, once again, I'll go back to what I said earlier. Trump is altering the conversation, and he is giving permission to white people to start to just around the fringes advocate for what they really want and for what they need in order to keep the United States functioning as a first world nation. So what Trump might be doing with his outsider, you know, boisterous personality is start to put this, you know, germinate a seed in the minds of some young men who might grow up and fulfill that role of being, you know, a Caesar or an Alexander or something that, you know, later on down the line, yawn, and form communities that would foster that. Part of what we need and that we're severely lacking in the United States is true masculinity for our boys and for our men, because we've been told for decades that if you're a white male and you act like an actual man, then that's toxic. You can't do that. Shame on you. Now, black people can play basketball and rob and rape and rap and do all this other type of shit, and that's just absolutely wonderful. Let's make statues of them. But if you're a white guy, don't you dare do anything. You should probably go ahead and transition to female noun, cut off your wee-wee. So we need to have extreme, explicit masculinity for our boys. They need to understand that that is a strength and that is expected of them and that is necessary to have a first world functioning nation in Western civilization. And to also just mention Trump's personality again, I think one of the reasons why people gravitate to him, even though they're doing impressions of him or making fun of him, is because he doesn't apologize for who he is. And he has extreme confidence in himself. And those are traits. Those are traits of strength that people can admire. You know, even sometimes you can admire those in an enemy of yours. If that person sticks to what they say they're going to do and they don't ever back down, you can admire that even in someone you don't like. The one problem, again, that I have with Trump, the thing that's missing is he is never going to sacrifice for his people. First of all, I don't think that he identifies with a people. He just identifies with, you know, having a successful business. And now his business is going to be the United States instead of a corporation. Even if he did identify a people that he belonged to, he wouldn't sacrifice for them. He's going to look out for himself, number one. So when we have a generation of boys being raised exhibiting extremely masculine traits, understanding their history, understanding what needs to be done, okay, then yes, we'll have the time of Caesars.
Very well said.
I was sitting and making a lot of notes. I really appreciated that. Brent, you say some deep stuff there. Absolutely. The future of the boys got to be as masculine as possible, and you got to have the proper traits of leadership, which includes the ability to sacrifice. The kinds of things that you said about Trump's personality, that Trump would look after himself first and that Trump won't sacrifice himself, that's not a positive on his character. That's not a positive. But he's still a lot better than the other junk that's out there. And at least he's opened doors. He seems to have definitely at least managed to open doors, like you say, where he's opened some doors and other whites will push through those doors.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. So, you know, in many ways, it sounds to me almost like one can conclude that one way or the other, it looks like white America is maybe starting to break through a bit. Would you say that white America is in bits and pieces starting to break through and it can start showing its power more and more in the future? If you have any quick final comments.
Little pieces of it are. Here and there, it's starting to break through.
That's perfect. That's perfect.
Yeah, you know, Mike, that's a good point, because we're still sort of in the dark here. And even though he's nominated a lot of these cabinet positions, they still have to get confirmed. So some might even get switched out, which one of the main ones already got switched out last week. So.
Yeah. One of the better ones got nixed already.
Oh, really? Okay. Because who?
Matt Gaetz, a extremely conservative Florida congressman, U.S. government congressman. He was nominated for attorney general, and it wasn't even a week later he resigned Congress and resigned the position. They had some sort of, you know, they had some sort of blackmail or dirt or something on him. And
was something sexual, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, what do you guys, well, maybe just a quick one. Do you guys think that of all Trump's promises, do you think that there's any chance that he's going to help do something about the illegals and the immigration?
Well, that's the one that I'm watching the closest, and I have to do a little bit of research on Tom Homan, who is supposed to be the border czar, which is not actually a cabinet position, so I don't know how much power he actually has. But that is what is going to set some people's hair on fire, you know, the anti-white liberals. And that's going to be maybe a flashpoint for the United States in getting people divided even more. And I'm hoping like hell that they start going in and grabbing the illegals and deporting the shit out of them. And there's going to be bitching and whining and moaning and kvetching and crying, and it's terrible, and they're separating families, and look at all the poor brown people. And I say, just fucking go for it. Put it on TV.
Yeah, and don't forget that there's massive, massive billions and hundreds of billions of dollars of funding behind all this from the U.S. government, primarily from the U.N. But this is, you've got to think about this in another way. These Jewish run agencies like Catholic Charities, despite the name is Jewish, and Hebrew Aid Society have received hundreds of billions of dollars to run this funnel of people coming in. So it's buses, flights, it's diapers, it's food. And then when they get into the U.S., their rent is being paid. They could literally be in a house next door to some poor white family that's barely making it and has worked some shitty jobs all their life. And they're getting a house paid with bills paid, and they're getting food cards. This is a, we should remember this for later. This is a humiliation ritual against whites. Yes. It's taking place.
Because the thing that I want to ask you is, would you say that the immigration issue is one of the pivotal issues of the Trump campaign? Or are
yeah, absolutely. Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
So yeah. If Trump fails on that, then he's really failed his electorate. But that should be one of his prime, if not his prime thing that he should be focusing on. If he wants to go down in history as anything decent.
If he fails on that, or to me, the other equally important and equally dangerous issue is if we end up fighting one of these wars for Jews or Israel, either in Israel against the countries around Israel or in Ukraine against Russia, if we end up fighting one of these wars, our people, our troops, and I don't mean a couple thousand, but a full-on, you know, war, then he's failed. He's failed, or perhaps, if you want to get into just pure speculation, perhaps they said, yeah, we'll let you win if you fight, you know, Iran, we think it's coming, blah, blah, blah. And to quote this interesting commentator named Joel Skousen, he says, Trump does not understand conspiracies, and that is his biggest weakness. He just looks at everything from briefings, and he can't understand deeper conspiracies. And perhaps, maybe that's why he doesn't understand the big question, you know, about control of our government and Congress, and who's behind, quite frankly, who's behind the, quote, persecution of him. I mean, it's quite clear.
Okay, gentlemen, that's been really awesome talking to you.
First of all, guys, I thought that was fantastic, especially for a short show. Really, man, great thoughts from both of you guys. Thank you.
I thought I'd add something to the back of this show. You had Brandt talking and giving some of his deep thoughts about whites and the kids and the future. And Brandt was talking about how much white boys should be way more masculine in the future, much more masculine in the future. And I thought I'd add a very short little video clip where they talk to an American soldier, a white American soldier, who's been involved in actual combat. And what did he learn from his time in combat? And listen to how this guy speaks. He's got a completely different outlook to anything that you would come across in America normally. But you're talking to a modern white guy who's been involved in combat. And listen to how he talks and the things that he's learned from this. It's a very short piece, but to me, that is an example of where the white boys need to go. They need to start thinking like this guy, because this is the correct way to think, and this is what comes out of military history.
Chunk Nellis, you did some serious combat operations here. What do you think was the most important thing you learned while you were actually fighting these people?
Well, the most important thing I learned is the violent execution of a good plan is probably the key to its success. Like when we use about a pound of C4 to blow off a door, the election headquarters back here, we probably took off a large portion of the roof and the back quarter of the building. And
do you think that a pound of C4 might have been overkill?
No, there's really no such thing as overkill here as far as I'm concerned.
It's you need to make sure you kill them and kill them good. Is that pretty much your philosophy?
Yeah, it's the old sledgehammer on the net kind of thing that I like.
I understand. Is it true that you used to train your platoon live fire exercises by shooting at hamsters and other small animals?
Right, right. We used to, you know, shoot and kill and eat live hamsters, you know, anytime we got the opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for listening today. I hope that you learned something new today. Look after yourselves and take care. We'll be chatting again soon.
not, my friend. If you don't see the end, if you don't see the top, don't stop. We know